So it's another one of those cold open thingies for this 19th day of February, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where, well, if you'd like to, you're welcome to get into the chat room. Pick out a screen name, a password. Be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. Who, well, frankly, all I know is he is a spacing guild master. I don't know if he's folded space or not. You know why? Because the update fairy came back from Microsoft. And I'm sort of stuck. You know, last night we had the Healing Hands of Faith. And somehow or another, through the powers of Arnold's mind and Scott's goodwill, we made the thing work. We healed it. And I even managed to get Skype going again from that computer. And, well, we got through Dr. Bill's program pretty much okay. And then about 30 minutes ago, as I was sitting here running through the pre-show checklist, the computer was behaving kind of strangely. And so I clicked down on the little start button. And I was offered the choice between shut down and restart shut down and update, or update and shut down, or update and restart. I chose update and restart. That, like I said, was 35 minutes ago. Ever since then, I've been watching that annoying little circle of dots go around and around and around and around with nothing on the screen except the word restarting. Yeah. Oh, don't worry, that's just congestion. It's not like I'm out there doing Adderall like Julius Geezer, rail after rail after rail. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the live program for the 19th of February, 2019. Mercifully, we have about 8 days left of February, the longest, shortest month in the year. And I just want to kick something. It's been approaching 72 hours of pure, unmitigated computer-generated hell. And I wish I understood why. Personally, I think the update that came through from Microsoft over the weekend was some sort of fucked up. And I don't know if they forced this one out in a hurry to cover for the screw-up they had. Like the little bank, one of the things that I did find out is the little bank of sound effects and intros and the Moran Monday music and all of that stuff. Well, it wiped itself out. It was there yesterday. So I guess I have a question for the computer geniuses in the Horn Family Community Congregation. And that is this. Now this is a man, this is a beast of a machine. Like I said, when Frank and I were putting it together, the Fab Machine, we made sure that it had the most hot shit processor and a blue bajillion gigs of RAM and you know, kick-ass solid-state drives. So I'm trying to figure out, what do I just sit here from now until Gabriel blows his horn, watching this thing cycle and saying, restarting, working? I don't know. I do know that in the interim, as is almost the case with every day of the month, we have someone to be thankful to, someone to be grateful to. And in that case, today we send out thanks to Joseph and to our buddy Dave in Talibandiana and our buddy David and to our buddy Dave from Talibandiana, to Mike in Cascadia, and to Sharon. And then Arnold jumped in along the way as well and took the end of February fundraising goal down to $916.21. Oh, fear not. Fear not, Brother Deacon Asa. Don't kick Agnes, please, Bob. I'm begging you. I never would do that. I wouldn't dream of it. I wouldn't even think of it. I wouldn't even let that happen. It never would have occurred to me had you not typed that. I feel kind of icky now that it happened, that I had some neurons to even taken up with the notion, because there wouldn't be anything left to me but a little greasy spot. But that's not why I wouldn't do it. It's because I adore her. So thank you to each and every one of those heretofore named for being partial sponsors of the program and helping in keeping the program on the air, to the tune of about a week's worth of a given month. That's past helpful. And again, if we can reach the fundraising goal, $916.21, by the close of the program on Thursday, well, actually by airtime on Friday, we will have a fundraising free Friday on the front porch, and won't that be wonderful? Yeah, I suppose so. Flavio says it's Microsoft. It's 2019. I stopped using Windows in 2007. 12 years without Windows. I use Linux. Pure bliss. Well, Linux wouldn't do what we have to do here. So that's out the window. And so I don't really... I don't know why the White Rose Society streams down either, but, you know, sorry about that. But at least HeadOn.live appears to be running nicely. All the interwebtube connections are solid. And I'm just sitting here looking at a sort of a, like an old tarnished gold-colored screen, and watching that infuriating little goddamn circle go around and restarting. What happens if you kill power during a restart? Anybody want to help me with that? Because the last thing I want to do is drive this magnificent machine onto the rocky lee of some computerless coastline. Ooh, that metaphor was doing a hell of a lot of work. But I don't see a hell of a lot of program happening without at least access to. Well, this is what I get for trying to go paperless and save a few damn trees, and not spending a fortune on ink and paper, and printing every blessed story I run across. Well, Brother Deacon Asa says computers can smell fear, Bob. Well, this is a Trump-tanic Tuesday, without a doubt, and it looks, yeah, maybe not the rocky lee, but the goddamn, maybe it's the, don't want to drive the computer into the iceberg up ahead. No, Flavio, I know my business. You think Linux couldn't do all you do there. It can do that and more. No, it can't. It really, really, really can't. Tried it. It was a terrible failure. So that's not exactly, What's that? Okay. And try rebooting into safe mode. Yeah, well, that's a possibility. But I'm just... God, and I wonder what we'll find with it. It'll probably redo the sound settings again. Of course, the big news of the day, and it dominated... it, despite the fact that there are rather serious allegations... out there about things like nuclear technology, you know, trivial, boring things like that. The entire interweb tubes were aflame with the big surprise that Bernie Sanders has announced that he's going to run for president. I don't know who thought Bernie Sanders wasn't going to run for president. He would be, and I'm miscalculated by about a year. If he were to win the presidency, he would turn 80 in September of 2021, making him at the but still nonetheless, making him even on the date of his inauguration, the oldest person ever to be sworn in as president of the United States in the not inconsiderable history of this republic. Well past the life, even now, past the life expectancy of an ordinary American male. Of course, in the modern era as well as the ancient one, in early America, it was not surprising to see people keeling over dead, men in their 40s. Hell, women in their teens, their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, childbirth and all. But wealth conferred a certain amount of security relative to life expectancy. While folks in Philly and New York and Baltimore and Charleston, whatnot, men and women might die in their 40s. There were a whole bunch of people who, because they had access to wealth, lived up into considerably advanced age. Consider Benjamin Franklin. Consider John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who died on the same day, July the 4th, 1826. The 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Aaron Burr lived a long life. On the other hand, George Washington was dead by the time he was 67. He might have lived longer, but he was subjected to the medicine of the age, in which the doctors, seeing that he was not feeling so well, said, "You know what we need to do? Bleed him a little bit. Yep, let's get the basin out and lower him by a couple of pints." And even if Washington would say, "No, boys, you know what? Let's think twice." "No, no, sir. You're our first president. You're a national treasure, sir. We definitely need to bleed you to get some of that black bile and those ill humors and those demons out of you. We're going to give you a bleeding, Mr. President." Yeah. Washington was 67 when he died. I guess we maybe I don't, maybe you don't. I do. I have in the past tended to think of him as old as dirt when he was president and then laying there at Mount Vernon. But he was only 67. Lincoln was a youngish man when he met his untimely end. Reagan was younger when he left the presidency with his brain deteriorating every minute of every day as he left the presidency in January 1989. He was younger then, leaving the presidency, and we know what a doddering old fool he was, than Bernie going in. If this is, but there's a caveat that goes with all of this, and that is that I'm going to vote for whomever the Democratic nominee is. And we will hopefully let the primary process sort out the candidates. Oh, for a minute there, I thought the computer was doing something, but no, it just went to the screen just went to sleep, and so we're still cycling and restarting. Yeah. People like, let's see. I mean, let's just look at some presidential ages, shall we? Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson dropped dead in 1973 of natural causes. And he was the first president to serve a full term in office after I was born. He was born in 1908. He died in 1973, 64 years old. Looked old as hell, too. How about Harry Truman? Now, Harry Truman lived to be a ripe old age. He was 88 years old when he passed away. Damn, I am. I'm snorting like Trump on an Adderall kick. But let's see. He was 16. He was 66 68 when he left office. That was very, very old for a president to be leaving office. Dwight Eisenhower was 78 when he shuffled off this mortal coil. And he lasted until 1969, which means that he left office at approximately 70 years old. Can you see how this doesn't bode well for either Bernie or Joe Biden? Of course, that was then and this is now. And there is a broadening disparity in life expectancy in this country today. For years and years and years, it climbed for both women and men. Eventually, female life expectancy outpaced male life expectancy. But over the course of the past 20 years, especially in places like Appalachia, we've seen it go the other direction. So that now, down in McDowell County, we've talked about this before, down in McDowell County, West Virginia, a man born there has a life expectancy roughly equivalent to a man born in Haiti, and a less life expectancy than a man born in Guatemala. Of course, some of that has to do with breathing poison every day of his life. Some of that has to do, I suppose, you could factor in things like the opioid crisis. But mostly it's breathing mountaintop removal dust. Because, of course, our mountaintop removal counties here in West Virginia, we have almost 1,000 statistical excess deaths every year. We just do. Unassailable. Peer-reviewed. Good, sound science. So, whether it's 1787 or 2019, access to wealth and privilege plays a tremendous role in whether or not one can reasonably expect to have a long life. All right, give me a second here. I hate doing this. I don't see any choice. I'm doing a hard shutdown on the computer, and God, I hope I've still got a computer when it comes back. 3, 2, 1. Ugh. All right, so now we find out. Kevin in Colorado Springs says, Bob, because of the talking software on my computer, I occasionally have to do what I call a hard reboot when the computer locks up on me. It involves killing the power, holding the start button down for about a minute, and then restarting the computer. Generally, about 99% of the time, it solves the problem, and the computer restarts and behaves normally. I'm not necessarily advising you to try this, but it often works for me. Too late now! yeah. But we'll let it sit there and think about what it's done until start it back up again. I had a note before airtime from our buddy. Our buddy Steve in New York. My thoughts on Bernie. What do you think? Bernie is past his time. He changed the narrative and was the reason for so much positive change. He's no longer an insurgency campaign and will likely be out of the race by April or earlier. California's primary is now in March. I wish he would be an elder statesman and kingmaker. I don't want to remember him as losing twice and the second time badly. Well, I'm not privy to what the inner workings of that campaign are. I'm a little, and listen, don't hate the messenger. But I am a little creeped out by the fact that, yes, Tad Devine was a business partner working hand in glove with Paul Manafort in Ukraine and went on to run Bernie's campaign in 2016. Let's just get that out there. Let's deal with it. And powering back up. It's a conversation, I think, that needs to be had. By the way, this is totally off topic, but no, it's not, because I was talking about the reduced life expectancy here in Appalachia. Today's kind of an important day, a noteworthy day. Today, the 19th of February, 2019, marks the 20th anniversary of the existence of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. In those 20 years, the grassroots activists of Coal River Mountain Watch have done as much or more to change the conversation about mountaintop removal as anyone or any organization out there. When Coal River Mountain Watch came into existence, mountaintop removal was an ugly, scarring scourge, or as Julius Geezer would pronounce it, scourge.
It was a scourge. Scourge. Definitely a scourge.
It was a scourge upon the land. It made the mountains into ugly, hateful places. It created vast amounts of seas of sludge and reduced the places that had been mountains to barren moonscapes that would not be a meaningful, and still won't be a meaningful, part of a viable ecology for about, at a minimum, 300,000 years. So, that. But because of the work of Coal River Mountain Watch, and because of the determination of people like Judy Bonds, the discussion about mountaintop removal has changed from one of esoterics and birds and bugs and beetles and butterflies to an to a recognition that it is an existential crisis as bad or worse than anywhere in the United States. So take a moment to be glad that Coal River Mountain Watch is out there. That there are hardcore point-of-the-spear activists who are in the heart of the sacrifice zone, who are engaging in this struggle from the belly of the beast, and who have at least, who have compelled people in Washington, D.C., among other places, to look straight at this region and understand what has been allowed to be done to the people here for nothing more than corporate profits. Yeah. All right. Stand by. Firing it up again. We'll see what happens. It would be really nice if my palette of sound effects wasn't gone, but the reasons for such things are known but to the nameless, faceless engineers tucked away somewhere inside the bowels of Microsoft. Okay, so now we have a please wait. Oh, getting Windows ready. Don't turn off your computer. That would have been... Okay, it seems to be... Seems to have come back. And let's do this. All right. We will now take a moment and let it settle down. And the first thing we'll check is the... Yeah, completely forgotten. Son of a gun. Well, nonetheless, let's see if we've got any audio.
It's showtime.
Hey, yay. At least that part's not screwed up. So I've got something different to work on between tonight and tomorrow. Yay. All right, things being such as they are, let's attend to the matters at hand. First things first. Let's get into the chat room. All right, yay. By Jove, the one day that I said I didn't know if he would, Sparky, a Spacing Guild Master, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. And pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, is also on hand, as is Brother Deacon Asa. And if you want to wander by, you'll be met by the likes of Anatole and Dowhead and Dennis and Jimmy and Labor Man and Otto and Squeaky. So, yay. It's a thing that works. All right. Sparky explains it got warmer, Bob. We're not going to be having any of that here. The big winter storm's on the way, and I guess we should. I should probably put that out there as a program note for tomorrow, and being prayer meeting Wednesday and thorn in the side Thursday. We never, you know, the infrastructure around here being such as it is, there's really no way of knowing if this storm is as bad as what they're saying. We'll have electricity. There's no way of knowing if we'll have interweb tubes. Because Appalachia, because bad weather. Subject line age, coming from Scott in San Diego. It's sobering to consider that when Mozart was my age, he'd been dead 29 years. As for Bernie's age, during the run-up to the California primary in 2016, I stood in line for over 4 hours to hear him speak. I'll bet you I was more tired that evening than he was. As I recall, he'd been at two other rallies that day and had taped a Tonight Show guest spot. All I want for Bernie is that he be allowed a fair opportunity to win or lose the Democratic nomination for 2020, something he didn't exactly have in 2016. I have a hard time buying into that they did him out of the nomination in 2016 thing, Scott. I'm not being hateful or anything, but I'd like to see some evidence of it. And all I ever see... is stuff from April and May of 2016 when he was already beat. You know, that's when people sent around some emails saying they didn't like him very much. But the fact of the matter is, he lost by 3 million primary votes. I think he lost by more primary votes than Trump lost to Hillary by in the general, as a matter of fact. But this is not 2016. And there's a whole lot more candidates in the field. It's not just Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee who will be gone. You know, no, there's a huge field out there. And to be fair, here are some of the things that bother me in a presidential candidate. I've been thinking about this, just a little list. I'm not trying, again, not trying to piss anybody off. We have conversations here. And, Labor Man, Bernie, in the chat room, Bernie was toast on Super Tuesday. Anatole says, who was counting those votes? Well, the people in the several states. The DNC certainly wasn't.
Goddamn DNC, neoliberal establishment shields.
Okay, so we might as well, let's just, you know, reality spoken here. Going back to 2016, there is a foot-thick binder of opposition research on Bernie, some of which has come out, but not all of it in the intervening time. That photo, look, do you remember the photo of Dukakis in the tank? That, in a big way, helped to tank Dukakis' 1988 presidential campaign? You remember the picture of John Kerry in the sperm suit that helped to tank John Kerry in 2004? Well, there's a picture of Bernie sitting in nothing but his tidy whiteies at a dinner with a bunch of other men sitting in their underwear. And I think there are some women in the photos too, but they're clothed at some sort of a dinner in Russia where it's apparently a thing for the men to sit around in their tidy whiteies. That exists on a continuum from Dukakis in the tank through John Kerry in the sperm suit to Bernie Sanders in his tidy whiteies. Then there's other things I don't like in presidential candidates. I will not support in the primary anyone. Uh-oh, that's going to be a double whammy. I'm not going to support in the primary anyone who has been, no matter how briefly or how far back, in a romance with the National Ruble Association. I'm about puked to that. And we do have a presidential candidate who, while nothing but an upstate New York member of the House, happily bleated about the support and the A-plus rating from the National Ruble Association and went on to brag not just that, but that that this parent kept loaded rifles, multiple rifles, loaded, ready to go, under the bed. That's kind of a deal breaker for me. I am creeped the hell out by arguments that slave labor should be permitted so as to save budget money for the state. I am also creeped the hell out by intimate relationships with the mining industry. Because that, too, is a thing. And, yes, there's age. And age is troubling for no less than three. No less than three potential Democratic contenders. I had a note from our buddy Joy. And Joy is trying really hard to just not get not. Joy's trying really up in Michigan, trying really hard not to be part of 2016 happening all over again. Joy noting, I think Biden will ultimately get the nomination because Methuselah isn't available. But I don't care who they pick, animal, vegetable, or mineral, it has my vote. I'm striving to keep my critical lip zipped this go-round, but let me say, and I presume Joy is okay with me sharing this with you, I saw Biden for the first time in a long while at John Dingell's funeral service. And Joe looked positively feeble. It took me aback to see how old he's gotten. My God. Meanwhile, my old Bernie or bust pals have entire Facebook threads devoted to calling Kamala Harris every name in the book, saying she's Clinton all over again, saying she's no different from Trump, and Joy doesn't mention it, but there's the really big one. Kamala is a cop. It hurts to see it, Joy says. They've even turned on Bernie because, quote, he hates women. So there's a... I guess what you could say is that there are people out there. Let's see. Yeah, there's something out there on Pete Buttigieg that he enabled. There's something out there on Julian Castro. Probably the mere association with the Clintons will be enough to tank his campaign. So, here's the thing. The perfect candidate is not out there. The perfect candidate is not going to run. Okay? Because the perfect candidate does not exist. Ah, thank you. Don from Prince George, British Columbia says, you're on. Thought you'd want to know you're hot on iTunes, nice and strong. Thank you. That means that everything's working according to plan, at least for the moment. Mm-hmm. David in South Carolina, Stan, points out, subject line, hot sauce, and Kamala puts hot sauce on greens. They're after her on this, too, saying that, oh, she's just copying Hillary. And you might recall there was a hissy over Hillary carrying a bottle of hot sauce with her in her purse. And everybody thought that was so not genuine. That was such a clear case of pandering. Never mind the fact that she'd been carrying a bottle of hot sauce in her purse for about 20 fucking years, because it's something Southern people do, and you can pick up Southern habits by living, I don't know, in the South. You know, Arkansas. And going after a woman of color for carrying hot sauce and putting hot sauce on greens, Jesus Christ, I burn under the refrigerator light bulb and I put hot sauce on greens. Okay? I mean, it was not shtick. It wasn't a joke. It wasn't a bit that every now and then I just take a swig of hot sauce because I like it. Probably a little more salt than I need, but damn, there are just some times when I crave that fire and I crave that acid. Yeah, there's Dennis in the chat room. I know people that carry hot sauce and even hot peppers with them at all times, so they have them when they dine out. Ta-da! Because you can't always... And if you're a hot sauce freak, you get particular about the hot sauce you like. We had the conversation the other night about if the first ingredient in a bottle of hot sauce is water, you know you're working with rehydrated chili peppers, not chili peppers that have just been fermented the old-fashioned way. It's basically the same process you use for kraut. And as Steve from Georgistan can tell you, there's all the difference in the world between living, bubbling, frothing, real kraut made the real way and the stuff that you get in the jar at the Wiggling Pig from Vlasic. But that's, that's where we are. Now, here's the thing. Are the people that are out there saying these things a bunch of Russian fucking bots? There's every possibility in the world that they are, but there's also a possibility that there are people out there who are real live human beings who learned abso-goddamn-lutely nothing from 2016 and want to do it again because the American political process has been turned into an always-on permanent reality show in which the modus operandi is somewhere around professional wrestling. Oh, hit him with the chair, right? So, you know, run Bernie, run. Cool. Run Kamala, run. Cool. Run Amy, run. Cool. I have to tell you that, and I'm not, I don't think I'm, well, of all the candidates out there, the one who probably inspires me the least is Amy Klobuchar. The fact that she's priding herself, what's that? Flavio says, if Jesus Christ himself ran for president, I'm sure Fox would find ways to slime him. Well, that's true, Flavio, but this is one of those a pox on all their houses kind of moments. Because, well, they're all doing it to one degree or another. But as far as Amy Klobuchar is concerned, she's been asked about the hot button issues that Bernie elevated into the conversation back in 2016. So-called free college. No, that's just college. That's a policy decision that we make to support college tuition for free for whoever can qualify and has the desire and the drive to get in and get through it. That's not saying everybody has to go to college. That was pointed out, my filthy little morning habit this morning. They pointed out, well, you know, college isn't right for everybody. And I suppose it's not. But the problem here is that not everybody needs to go to college. It's that the people who want to go to college, go to a state school, you know, not someday be president because they went to the fucking Ivy League, but, you know, go and get a good 4-year brick-and-mortar degree education. The problem we have is that you can't do that right now without coming out with the aggregated debt of a small country per person. Yeah, Steve from Georgia Stan says, Bob, someone has to wash the dishes. You know what? There are a lot of people with degrees out there washing dishes. But the thing is, they've got something to think about while they're washing them. There's no shame in washing dishes. No shame in waiting tables. There's no shame in honest, earnest labor. But the question is one of finding out what it means in the all too short period of time that we have to sort of toddle around this little planet. Kurt Vonnegut said, babies, I promise you, we were put here to fart around. So the problem isn't that we, you know, that the goddamn liberal Democrats are trying to force everybody to go to college. People like Joe Scarborough sound like Judge Smales from Caddyshack in those moments. Well, the world needs ditch diggers too. Right. So the problem isn't that we want to force everybody to go to college. It's the problem that college should be reasonably available to people who want to go, and we should stop making goddamn value judgments and think that the only thing that college is good for is to churn out people who can sit in cubicles for corporate America. America needs its artists. America needs its painters, its sculptors, its multimedia artists. America needs poets and historians and anthropologists and linguists. all of those things that, well, that in many ways capitalism hasn't quite figured out how to perfectly monetize. And then there's the issue of the health care. Amy Klobuchar says that we can be aspirational about Medicare for all, but that maybe she thinks she might sort of kind of like to see a state-based system where people can buy into Medicaid. Jesus Christ, no offense to Amy Klobuchar, but does she even listen to those pig-eyed right-wing freaks that have the majority in the Senate right now? Has she ever heard Tom Cotton or Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, or that great scholar of the Constitution, Mike Lee from Utah, opine about how desperately they want to turn Medicaid into block grants so that Republican governors can use it to, buy new automobiles for their security staff or a home in the country with a river of beer flowing over their grandmother's paisley shawl? Because making it a some sort of a public option with a Medicaid buy-in is not... No, that's not sustainable, because the minute we do that, the Republicans will be after it trying to block grant it. So there's just not much out there that Amy Klobuchar believes in. But the one that kind of crawled all over me was with regard to the so-called Green New Deal. And nobody really knows what the Green New Deal is. It's a statement of principles. There's no proposed actual legislation. But with regard to the Green New Deal, she said, "This is put out there as an aspiration in that it's something we need to move toward. Do I think we could cross every T and dot every I in 10 years? Actually, I think that would be very difficult to do." And all of this is by way of another one of those free publicity town halls that the for-profit media should not be giving out. I'm just, there's something icky about those things. It feels like some sort of closing the barn door after the horse has gone expiation for all the free publicity that they gave to Julius Geezer back when he was a novelty candidate in 2015 and could get on the air anytime that he felt like calling a program on Fox, or say that Morning Zoo crew on MSNBC. Sorry, I got to change the propane tank. But the Green New Deal response is troubling, because that "I don't think we could ever do the Green New Deal in 10 years" sort of thing tells me that either Amy Klobuchar has not read or does not believe the U.S. government and U.N. climate panel's assessments of what's coming down the pike for the United States and the planet if we do not get deadly in earnest about getting off of fossil fuels. Now, I'm one of the few people that has said that we are not necessarily being honest with ourselves or with each other when we talk about what that entails. Because as far as I can tell, it's going to involve a hell of a lot of sacrifice. that will probably scare the living bejesus out of most of the American people. But we need to treat it as the existential crisis that it is. We need to treat it as, we need to treat climate change as the threat to the ability of this planet to support human life that it is. On the other hand, Amy Klobuchar says that her idea of an environmental program would be more like bringing back Barack Obama's clean power plan and gas mileage standards. Jesus Christ. She doesn't understand at all, does she? She hasn't a clue. Because the ultimate question is whether or not the generations that will be here after mine and hers is gone will be able to survive. If this was, 1970, the Clean Power Plan and Barack Obama's fuel efficiency standards would be a nice part of an environmental mix. But my God, it's not. It's 50 years too late for those kinds of little half measures. Recently, I think it was Google has invested some $700 million in a company that is working on electric pickup trucks. And things that will, the hard questions about how people get around in rural America, nobody's really working on that I've heard. But we've got to have, for instance, just my existence. If I want to go over to Kroger's, and we try to limit, we try to live fairly, we try to minimize our carbon footprint here in a lot of different ways. We don't use a lot of electricity. Most of the electricity gets used, the majority of the electricity gets used back here in the studio. But, there are electric lights and things like that. But I don't drive a lot. We don't drive a lot. But if I want more than the basics, I have to go a 30-mile round trip to get a 35, 40-mile round trip to get over across the river to go to the stores that have things in them. And in terms of electric vehicles, that's almost the entirety of a charge for some vehicles. For others, different ranges, different capacities. But one of the things we found out, for instance, is that battery technology is limited by cold weather. Batteries drain faster in cold weather. And there are people in rural America who still have driveways and carports and not nice warm garages in which to store their automobiles. But Amy Klobuchar is defining her candidacy by her willingness to be someone who tells us, no, we can't have nice things in the future. And we can't have a sustainable grid. We can't have renewable energy. We can't have college tuition that doesn't send students into crushing debt. And we can't, we certainly can't have Medicare for all. And for some reason or another, that's getting her some press as a, well, how is it described? As being the presidential, the Democratic presidential candidate who is bold enough to say no. And I think based upon her statements, it's a fair thing to ask her, if someone would ask her straight up, do you agree with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the United States government's assessments of what's coming down the pike for the United States and planet Earth if we do not get off fossil fuels? Because she said, I don't think you can just eliminate entire industries in the United States. Well, that right there, that's that moment when I went, oh, something smells like mining. Steve in New York says, we don't always get what we want. I saw a statistic that 16% of Hillary voters went for McCain in 2008. 10% went for Trump in 2016. So Bernie voters were more loyal. However, one thing the Clintons have always been good at is deflection and blame. I've actually kind of grown to like Hillary. I could never stand Bill. I've realized that we never get all of what we want in life. Why people think politics shouldn't follow that rule is beyond me. I look at it this way. I want someone who agrees with me on certain things. However, on the things where we don't agree, I'd like to have someone who is open to me. I think Hillary was that person. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. Well, again, there's no getting around the fact that we would be in a far better place were she president right now, as opposed to the 72-year-old man-baby orange toddler in the White House. Who, by the way, it being, day to day, there's indications that of even more graft and corruption in that filthy regime. I just got something from David in South Carolina, Stan. Dear people mad at Kamala for putting hot sauce on her greens, hot sauce goes on greens. Maybe you should stop putting mayo on your greens, weirdo people. Right. Yeah, Ron in Raleigh says, age is just a number. Remember in his last term how they rolled Strom Thurmond into the Senate chamber looking for all the world like Captain Christopher Pike? Yeah, blink once for yes, twice for no, Strom. These folks don't think they're ever going to die. Dianne Feinstein will be 92 at the end of this term, which she shouldn't have run for. I guess the draw of the spotlight is too much for these folks. Even Miss Nancy should be grooming her successor. Age may be just a number, but it means something. And frankly, the number means more the higher the number gets. And I suspect Nancy Pelosi is grooming her successor. But by the way, I saw something out there the other day that somehow that Nancy Pelosi's age means that we could run Methuselah for president and it wouldn't make a difference. There's a big damn difference between being the Speaker of the House and being the President of the United States. There are literally hundreds of members of the House of Representatives, any one of whom could theoretically step up and become Speaker of the House, and most of whom, by the time they've been there a couple of terms, have a pretty good idea of the essential workings of the body. If, God forbid, Nancy Pelosi were to keel over, there would be a brief power vacuum, somewhat of a struggle for power, and then someone with the skill set to do the job would likely emerge, at least on the Democratic side. This is nothing at all like what happens over on the Republican side, where they, where the wackadoodles of the Feedum caucus control access to power. A president dying in office or becoming incapacitated in office, however, is an entirely different kettle of fish. Because the only thing you've got there is a vice president. Until the next election. And depending on who your vice president is, it could become quite messy. What was it that was said of... of George H.W. Bush, that by selecting Dan Quayle, he had assured that everyone in America, Democrat and Republican alike, would pray for his continued good health. Yeah, right. That. Because Dan Quayle, potato with an E, who remarked upon his first tour to Latin America, said he wished he'd paid more attention in Latin class. I remember these things. Steve in New York points out, 7 years is all it took us to go to the moon after JFK made the challenge. Where's our imagination? Well, our imagination left us long about January the 20th, 1981. Actually, you could say that it left us before then. It left us when Richard Nixon decided that there was no more political advantage to be had, and that people had grown ho-hum bored with all those moon landings, because, well, we could just do it anytime we wanted to, it appeared. And so the remainder of the Apollo missions to the moon were canceled as he ramped up the bombing of Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos. And Watergate took shape, and, yeah. But our imagination certainly dropped dead on January 20th, 1981, when old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, entered office, doddered into office, even at his youngish age back then. And we stopped thinking about doing great things. And for all of his talk about the shining city on the hill, mommy, catch this vegetable, we didn't view our potential greatness the way we had in the past. And instead of coming up with something truly bold and inspiring in terms of a space program, instead, we got the dumbass Star Wars missile defense system, in which theoretically we were going to shoot a bullet out of the sky with a bullet. That's right, hit one bullet with another bullet. Still breathtakingly stupid. What's Scott say here? Bernie and age, energy, and commitment. Please share this brief quote with the Horn family, Bob. For me, it sums up where Bernie's coming from. This isn't to say that the sense of these words fit him solely or uniquely. More than a few of us share the sentiments expressed by George Bernard Shaw. This is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one, the being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. God, that last part sounds like Trump. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle for me. It is a sort of splendid torch which I've got hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations. What's that old line? The point of life is not to live serenely and sedately and leave a nicely mummified corpse, but rather to slide into the grave 100 miles an hour with a smoke in one hand and a drink in the other, hollering, "Whew, what a ride!" Kevin in Colorado Springs. Obama said, "Yes, we can," but Amy says, "Well, actually, no, we can't." And then the whole "yes, we can" part didn't turn out to be quite as dynamic as we might have hoped. Ron in Raleigh, subject line: "What the hey? The Republicans like Amy, so what the hey? Why shouldn't we? Her big selling point is that she can work across the aisle, which means she can fold like a cheap card table in any dealings with Addison McConnell." Oh yeah, Addison McConnell. Addison McConnell. Richard Burr. Paul Ryan. Devin Nunes. That's four of them. The other four would be Chuck Schumer and a couple more whose names don't come immediately to mind. The so-called Gang of Eight. It turns out that when the FBI decided to open an investigation into whether or not Donald J. Trump was and is an active asset of a hostile foreign power, to wit, Mother Russia, they confidentially briefed the Gang of Eight, including Addison McConnell. And when they briefed the Gang of Eight, neither Addison McConnell nor Devin Nunes nor Richard Burr. You get the idea. None of the Republicans uttered a peep of protest about that investigation that Julius Geiser is now screaming constituted a bureaucratic coup. Oh, judiciary. I guess Chuck Grassley would have been one of them, maybe. Yeah, because it was the majority and ranking minority leaders of the House and Senate and the Judiciary or Intel Committees. There's eight of them. Four Republicans, four Democrats. Look it up. But Andrew McCabe indicated that it's not like it was some sort of thing that was done in the dark. That, in fact, governmental procedures, constitutional procedures, were followed. And so... McConnell's got some splaining to do. Maybe he needs to splain it to precious Lindsey Graham. Because precious Lindsey is convinced that this was some sort of a coup against Donald J. Trump. The only problem being that it wasn't. The fact of the matter is, It would have been a dereliction of duty not to have investigated that. Of course, it was also Addison Mitch McConnell who refused to join Barack Obama in pointing out that the Russians really had interfered and had been interfering in our electoral process. Kind of makes you wonder. Just how deep the Russian hooks go into old Addison, doesn't it? Yeah. So we are 18 minutes into the second hour of the program, approaching the halfway mark of the program on this Titanic Tuesday. We have $916.21 to raise by the beginning of the program on Friday, if we are to have a week of fundraising free radio. Beyond that, and more importantly, we have $916 to raise in order to keep the horn on the air. The interface is over at headon.live. You can also just go to PayPal and use bobkincaid@gmail.com. And that's how we keep this little exercise and conversation going. So maybe consider it. Earther with a note. If money weren't a problem, if you won the world lottery currently at $50 billion, would you rebuild your house and make it state of the art, or would you say, fuck it, I'm moving to New Orleans? Okay, there's no world lottery yet. I'm a hillbilly. We pine. You could set me in the Clampett mansion there in what isn't actually Beverly Hills, and I would find a way to pine for this place. I think I'd like to go somewhere with less particulate matter in the air. There are places in Appalachia like that, in Pendleton and Pocahontas and Greenbrier counties. More than anything, though, I'd like to get off the damn grid and have that be a feasible alternative. Okay, then, let's run over and check in on the phone lines. Welcome to the program on the Skype line.
Can you hear me?
I do.
Oh, awesome. This is Matt from Arcata.
Yes, I know. I recognized your voice.
All right. Well, I was mostly just testing the line for my appearance tomorrow.
Yes, you're going to be chatting with Dr. Bill.
Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe we could, share that with the congregation.
Absolutely. We'll just go ahead and talk about this while we're on the air. Depending on how Skype is behaving, it may be better off if you come in through the stress line, Matt.
Okay. Through the stress line?
You know, the toll-free number.
Yeah, or the 663-2829.
No, that's not 663. It's just use the 844-843-4676.
Okay. What happened to the 304-663-2829?
It was never 663. It's 640.
Oh, 640. I'm sorry. So that would work too.
That's the same. It's the same phone number.
Okay.
It's there. Okay. It's the same phone. Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right.
And in fact, I believe Agnes will be calling you.
Okay. That sounds good.
So,
well, would
I know Dr. Bill's looking forward to it.
Okay. Would you mind sharing with the folks?
Well, no, I don't want to steal your thunder. That's like Dr. Bill was talking about it earlier today. He says, I'm not going to talk about it because I want Matt to talk about it. So I think it would be far better to, as the saying goes, keep the powder dry for tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be talking about it came up during last week during the whole the Eric Porterfield
right
business.
Yeah, that nasty sack of sin.
Yeah. And so Dr. Bill and I started corresponding. Actually, we've been corresponding for a while now, and we got the idea that I'd come on for a program and talk about a couple of topics. One is about I've been blind since birth. Completely blind, and so, like Kevin in Colorado Springs says, in a lot of ways, I just don't see. I don't really see race or ethnicity or any of that, and so it's I have some insights into we're going to talk about just the sort of the racial hatred that's been going on and since Trump came in.
Sure.
And then the other thing is that also talking about Facebook and how people are so prone to just find things that Facebook is kind of has been replacing real investigative journalism these days, and so things like big league politics, for example, have kind of stepped into the void. And then people find stuff on Facebook, and they'll barely read it, but they either click on it or share it without giving it a second thought. And I have dealing with a mental health disorder. I have to take some medications for it. I've run into some of these things like dire, almost like anti-vaxxer type stuff, but the equivalent of that when it comes to psychiatry and
Mean people like Tom Cruise declaring that psychiatric meds don't really work and all you have to do is take care of your thetans?
Yeah. Or
there's not really any such thing as mental illness?
Yeah.
I mean, those are two really Looney Tunes tenets of Scientology.
Right. Or the other thing is that the psychiatric meds are a great big plot by a big pharma.
Well, I'm sure capitalism, Matt. I mean, to that extent, it is a plot by Big Pharma. It's a plot to increase share value and increase profits. But that doesn't mean that they don't work.
Right. Nor does it mean that folks like me don't need them.
Right.
But you'd see these dire warnings. Basically the equivalent of vaccines causing autism. I've run into some.
Oh God, yes, I know.
Well, there are similar things like that, and I've run across that on Facebook, and I ignore that kind of trash because I know better. Because I know from 30 years of experience that the meds I take quite literally have helped keep me on this side of the dirt.
Sure.
But I think it's a pretty serious problem that contributes to the...
Well, and again, one of the things that we found out from the anti-vaxxer experience is that, yes, that was another point of contention that was exploited by the troll farm there in Mother Russia, along with the GRU. Anything that they can get their little mitts on to try to sow division in this country, they'll do.
Yeah, right. So... And I think that's one of the things that contributes to the fact that we see so much untreated mental illness around.
Well, and if you couple that with the fact that that there are so many people who were victims of Chief Justice John Roberts's decision to make sure that those poor put upon Confederate states didn't have to accept all that free money from the federal government to expand their Medicaid programs. It's a double whammy.
Yeah, that's true.
Which in turn points out the fallacy and foolishness of somebody like Amy Klobuchar saying that she wants everybody to be able to buy into Medicaid.
Okay.
You know, because those are state-run programs, and you would still have to figure out some way to do with Medicaid what John Roberts said you can't do with Medicaid. So now we're back to Medicare.
Uh-huh. So anyway, Dr. Bill and I are going to be discussing those two topics.
Right, tomorrow at 1 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, so that would be 10 a.m. Pacific.
Right.
Yeah, so, same. The same stream will be carrying it, HeadOn.Live. And I know Agnes and I are looking forward to it, and I know Dr. Bill's looking forward to it.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. And I just wanted to share that with Horn Family Community Congregation, in case anybody would like to tune in.
And, of course, anybody who's taking the RSS feed from White Rose for Dr. Bill's podcast stream or who is downloading from podbean.com will get it after the fact as well.
Right. Okay. Well, that's pretty much all I had. I'm a little nervous, and I sound kind of tongue-tied.
No, you don't sound tongue-tied at all, and you don't sound nervous either. You just sound mellow. And if you can't be mellow if you can't be mellow where you are in California, I don't think you can be mellow at all.
Yeah, well, I have a hard time. hopefully he'll try to do it in a way that, like, just as kind of an interview format.
Well, I don't know what he has planned. It'll just be a conversation.
Okay, because it's going to be hard for me to just start talking off the cuff.
Well, you know how genial Dr. Bill is. It'll be as easy as can be.
Okay. No, that's... Well, I'm just trying to psyching myself up for it.
Well, psych yourself up. Don't psych yourself out.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, I just wanted to let folks know that I'll be on. And if they're so inclined to tune in or download the podcast, hopefully you'll get some good reviews.
Oh, I'm sure it will be well received. Matt, you have yourself a good evening, my friend, and we'll be looking forward to tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. It's our buddy Matt up in Humboldt County. And let's keep the ball rolling and run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia again.
Yeah, what's happening, Reggie?
I didn't know you were done with the other caller. Okay. Well, how do you feel about Trump going after SNL as he, you know, calls or considers retribution? Doesn't he know how many crazy psychos out there that are listening to him? I mean, that are following him, you know?
Oh, I think that's the point, Reggie.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's the point. I mean, that goes all the way back to the campaign when he was suggesting that gun freaks take out their Second Amendment remedies on Hillary Clinton.
Right. Well,
he wants to keep them ginned up to a high state of froth.
So he wants them to go to prison for murder. Is that it? You know, it's illegal to...
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't.
Huh?
He wouldn't. Nothing would happen to him.
He would deny it all?
No, he wouldn't deny it. He'd just say, you know, hey, somebody was crazy. It's the Rush Limbaugh defense. It's the Glenn Beck defense. It's the Alex Jones defense. Hey, what do you mean one of the nut jobs that listens to my program decided to go out and murder people? I'm just an entertainer.
I'm just
the president, and so it's deemed right. to be too attenuated for any sort of judicial challenge to be made. You know, Charlie Manson never drew a knife or a gun, never fired a shot, but wound up dying in prison for what he did. But the thing is, he was directly exhorting his followers to go and do things. That's not the same
right.
as, that is apparently not the same thing as sitting there with your two tiny thumbs banging away on your unsecured phone into Twitter.
Yeah, but them being an entertainer or president of the United States is no excuse for breaking the law.
Well, according to any number of right-wing legal eagles, including Brett Kavanaugh,
right.
It is an excuse. The president is, they say that while he's in office, the president is above the law. The president can do anything he wants, and in the immortal, filthy words of Richard Nixon, if the president does it, it's not illegal.
Right. Yeah, but why did he choose to resign before they finally got his ass? Well, Nixon, that is.
Because he had as weird as it may seem, Reggie, a modicum of decency, and he did not want to be the first president to be removed from office via impeachment and trial in the Senate.
Right. Imagine had President Kennedy on down have done the same thing that these two have done. I mean, that these two have done, that he and the late Richard Nixon have done. You know what has happened to them? You know, well, from JFK, Jimmy Carter, you know, Bill Clinton, President Barack Obama, you know, that's four Democrats, right? What have they done, something of that nature? Do you know exactly what would have happened to them if they pull up the exact same tricks that these guys pulled off, manipulative tricks as they are, but tricks nonetheless? Do you know exactly what would have happened to them, Bob? They would, you know, they would have been drugged, hung out to dry, as it were. Right, Bob? Right, Bob?
Well,
hung out to dry.
Do you mean that a Republican Congress would have had kittens with crocheted tails and filed a bill of impeachment against Barack Obama, for instance, if he'd tried half of this shit?
Yeah, you would have been hung out to dry or dragged out of the White House, you know, or attacked as he was for eight long years, hard years, right?
Sure.
You would have been, you know.
Because there's an American rule of political construction at work here, Reggie. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is, but why can't they attack us and we can't fight back, you know, to defend ourselves, you know what I mean, from this bullshit that they throw at us each and every single day, whether it's on radio or television. And as you would say, why doesn't the for-profit media call these people out on anything? Does he have control, hold, or power over them?
The people in the for-profit media work for corporations that are run by Republicans.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, that's why I despise the American campaign finance system so much.
Right.
Even if you're Bernie fucking Sanders,
right?
you've got to pump money into the pockets of white-wing oligarchs who own the media in order to get your message out there. So here's this democratic socialist who has to, in turn, participate in the most naked brute force form of capitalism and do an upward wealth transfer from poor people out there busting their goddamn asses to send in $3 to Bernie Sanders so that he can give it to a billionaire media corporation.
Right. Well, be careful, because Nicole Sandler loves Bernie Sanders. It's like he practically has a crush on him.
Oh, No. I'm trying to stay above the fray in all this. I used Bernie Sanders as an example because, you know, Bernie's a man of the people. Bernie's a democratic socialist. Bernie believes in wealth distribution down to the, you know, down to us peons and piss ants down here. And yet us peons and piss ants are going to have to pay for the privilege. And we're going to do that by giving $3, or can you give $27, so that it can in turn be given to some godforsaken conglomerate that's owned by a bunch of goddamn Republican, goddamn oligarch, goddamn billionaires.
Right. And we got to get money out of politics. But what do you think about Alexandria Cortez and Kamala Harris? And even Elizabeth Warren.
What do you mean? What do I think?
Their hats in the ring. What you think they're gonna? You think they're gonna run or win or not?
Reggie, it is February of 2019.
Oh, right.
We are a year away from the first primary, and
that's
so we've got a year to wait and see how this thing shakes out. I think this is a very different political dynamic from 2016. In 2016, you had Bernie, you had Hillary. Well, first you had Hillary, and Hillary didn't think she was going to have a challenge. And then Bernie pops up, and then Lincoln Chafee pops up, and then Jim Webb pops up. Those two just are gone before the first primary, but Bernie stayed in and changed the dynamic. And it was like a series of heavyweight prize fights into like March and April. Well, that's not what this is. I don't know how long Julian Castro or Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar or any of the others, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, I don't know how long any of them will last, because sooner or later, they're going to have to attack each other. They're going to have to make a case for why one is better than the other.
Like Hillary attacked Bernie over 2 years ago.
And like Bernie attacked Hillary relentlessly.
Right. Yeah. Do you think she should run again or not?
Hillary?
Hillary Clinton. Yes.
Oh, yeah, Jesus, Hillary. No.
Why not, Bob?
Why not? I don't know, because two bites at the apple is enough.
Right.
Because I don't want to see a rehash of... a rehash of 2016, and because I think she has chosen, it by all appearances, she has chosen to sit in the background and play king or queen maker.
Yeah, but do you think Joe Biden should run?
No, absolutely not.
Why not, Bob? Because two bites of the apple is enough?
No, in his case, because... I mean, if he wanted to run, he should have run in 2016.
Right.
But this time through, no, I've got to, like I said, I'll vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is up to and including an old yeller dog.
Right.
But I am not going to get behind the primary efforts of anybody who is over 70.
Why you say that, Bob? Over 70,
life is short, and by the time you get up north of 70, it's getting shorter every day.
Yeah, they could die up there, right, Bob? They could die, right?
In office. I mean, mortality is a human thing.
Yeah, like you say, they should retire and stay retired, right?
I simply think that it is that at some point in time, you know, John Kennedy said the torch has been passed.
Yeah, like you said, they have their time in the sun. They're not somebody else's turn, right? It's the younger people's turn.
I mean,
the younger generation's turn.
Look, Bernie was born in 1941.
Right.
Biden was born in maybe 1942 or 1943.
Yeah, and Bill Clinton was born in 1946.
And so were some others. But the point that I'm trying to make is that you're talking about people seeking to lead the country and the country being, on average, a hell of a lot younger than that.
Yeah. And young people have some brightest ideas, I think. You know what I'm saying? Like Alexandria Cortez and the like. They come up with brand new ideas, new bright ideas, Bob. You know, ideas that have never been thought of previously. Ideas that previously haven't been thought of before now. You know, like the new Green Deal.
Look, let's remember the resolution on the Green New Deal was introduced in the Senate by Ed Markey.
Oh, right.
Not exactly a spring chicken.
Right.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is backing it in the is backing it in the House, but again, it's not even a law. It's a bunch of ideas. It's just a resolution. It's not it's not going to do anything per se.
Right, but like I said, younger people are coming with brand new brighter ideas each and every single day. Right, even as we're both.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that they're better or brighter, but they're theirs. Yeah. They are theirs, Reggie. And you know, as the old saying goes, life belongs to the living.
Yes, it does. I mean, who wants to go back to the same old elite establishment, as it were? Like you said, the political dynasty. You know,
I don't think Elizabeth Warren is establishment politics.
That's true.
But you know, she'd be getting on up over 70 if she became president.
Right,
and it's not something that traditionally has been.
Yeah.
That I mean, 50s and 60s, I think, has probably been the average for most presidents.
Right, but remember, Ronald Reagan was like 70 when he was elected president of the United States of America.
Yeah, well, I think he. Remember? I think. when he left office on January 20th, 1989, he was like 77 years old.
Right. So, it was fortunate that he survived that long until 2004. You know what I mean?
I mean, look, my dad always pointed out that the presidency doesn't seem to take a toll on Republicans because they don't care much about governance anyway.
Right.
But anybody who actually cares about doing the job, it makes them old. Barack Obama went from looking like Denzel Washington to looking like Ossie Davis.
Well, what about Bill Clinton?
It aged the hell out of him, too. And you know, there he was having heart surgery almost immediately after he gets out of the office.
Well, what about Jimmy Carter, even though he had one term?
Jimmy Carter aged visibly while he was in office, but the quantum of basic decency that informs him, I think, is and his activity level is what has made him probably the most remarkable ex-president that we will have ever had.
Right. And I would say Lyndon Johnson, but he only served one term after President JFK was killed.
Yeah, and Lyndon Johnson died young.
Yeah, he died young. So did JFK, because he was killed.
Well, the assassinations are an exception to the rule. But probably Lincoln, had he not been assassinated?
Yeah.
And this is one of those parlor games that historians play. In the aftermath of the Civil War, there's a possibility he would have been impeached because of the conduct of his wife.
Right.
Or his own conduct, for that matter. But he was a sick man. Most people don't know, for instance, that he probably came down with smallpox as he was coming back from giving his speech at Gettysburg in 1863.
I didn't know that.
And he had horrible intestinal problems, and he treated it with a medication that was made primarily of mercury.
Right. And look at what this presidency is doing to Donald Trump now. And he's in his 70s, you know?
Well, and I don't think...
You don't think what, Bob?
If I were the GOP, I would at least be having some conversations with Mike Pence on how to president.
Right.
Because I'm not talking about impeachment. That man is in such... Donald Trump is in such horrible shape that they're having to tell... giant falsehoods,
right?
About the status of his health.
Right, that's true. And that's true. Why doesn't he go to the doctor? I thought they had doctors.
He had a bullshit physical. But you can't. You can't let somebody do a physical on him who's actually going to do what a physical entails.
Mm-hmm. That's true,
but they did it. You know, they did admit that they doubled the dosage on his statin medication because they can't keep him away from the hamburgers.
Right. And doesn't he take his orders from Fox News and Hate Talk Radio anyway?
I think he takes his orders from Mother Russia. That's where he takes his orders from.
From Putin?
Yeah.
From Putin. Yeah. From Putin.
That's why no one was allowed to have notes of his conversations with Pootie.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically it was a corporate performance review.
Right. Well, he should be impeached for that. This is true treason, right, of this country. That's illegal. He should be impeached and removed from office for that and everything else in between. I just hope that the Democrats get it through their thick-headed skulls and to impeach and remove this man from office before it's too fucking late. You know what I mean? Before it's too late, right, Bob?
It may have been too late, Reggie, on January the 20th, 2017.
Right. So they should have thought about this then, about impeaching him and removing him then.
Well, but that wasn't going to happen because we don't have a Republican Party that's interested in honoring their oath to the Constitution.
Right.
Yeah.
And if this was, like I said, if this was a Democrat, all hell would have broken loose a long time ago. right?
Sure it would.
All hell would have broken loose. But since it's a Republican, it's okay if you're a Republican, but it's not okay if you're a Democrat. Hypocrisy much, Bob? You know, double standard and hypocrisy much?
Well, listen, nobody is ever going to go broke overestimating the power, I guess, of IOKIYAR. Hey, Reggie, you have yourself a good night, my friend. We'll talk soon, all right?
You do too, Bob. And like you said, the for-profit media is enjoying this because they're getting paid for this, correct? They're enjoying this, him being in the White House.
Hey, you know what? The checks keep clearing, don't they?
Yeah, it increases their profits. That goes for radio and television too, Bob. And like you say, we have to fight against the establishment each and every single day, right?
There we go. All right, Reggie, you take care, man.
You do too, Bob.
Later. Bye.
All right. Keep warm, man.
I'm trying.
Keep warm and dry, okay?
Thanks.
All right, man.
Bye.
You're welcome.
Our buddy Reggie calling from Decatur down Georgia way. What's this? Monique says, let's keep at least keep it real, Bob. There's a reason you have to be a certain age to run in the first place. There needs to be an age gap on the presidency. Some Bernie bros are bots and others are cult members, just like Cult 45. Nancy Reagan, Monique adds, was running the government. Yeah, you got it. The Constitution says you got to be at least 35 years old, I think, to run for president. So that lets out Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for a few more years. Beyond that, the except for the fact that you got to be born here, you know, which Obama was, even though Donald Trump maintained and melanoma, she participated too, maintained a racist fiction that somehow he wasn't. They've already started running that shit on Kamala Harris too, by the way. Monique says, let's talk about how Bernie can take resources from the DNC and never commit to being a Democrat. Why doesn't he run independent? I'd respect him more. Because he knows that an independent has never won the presidency of the United States. It's really quite that simple. But the other part of it, and this is something I'm going to watch because I'm you know, this is, if you listen to this program, you know I've been talking about this for a long time. Dare to dream in 2020. Dare to envision, you know, dare to visualize a Senate that doesn't have Mitch McConnell, Russian agent, in it. Dare to visualize a Senate that doesn't have John Cornhole in it. Dare to visualize a Senate that is minus 20 Republican senators, because that's how many have to run in 2020. Now, presidential election years are supposed to be good coattail years. I want a Democratic nominee for president who is going to run hard for the presidency and also run hard on the idea of the only way that we're going to deal with any of the problems that press in upon us is for that president to have a viable majority in both the House and the Senate. We've got to have what Donald Trump had. And then we've actually got to, and we've got to take advantage of the fact that being Democrats, we know how to govern and want to govern and want to get things done. Okay? Yeah. So we're coming up on the close of the second hour of the program. Again, big old goose egg, and we remain at $916.21 to finish the month of February. I'm going to take a minute, let the phone lines, if you want to get in on the stress line, there's somebody on the other line right now. If you want to get in on the stress line, jump right in, but it's a Tuesday, so let's find out what Brad and Desi are up to with the Green News Report. Okay? Thanks.
It's Tuesday, February 19, 2019.
The Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act no longer exists for our protection in Hidalgo County, Texas.
Bill to avoid government shutdown protects wildlife refuges, but Trump's national emergency puts them back on the chopping block. Plus, it's the Green News Report's 10th anniversary.
What? All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's like Trump's people are saying, I know kids in cages sounded evil, so we toned it down. We're just strangling butterflies.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, really? 10 years? A full decade of the Green News Report?
Yep.
And yet you have still failed to save the planet.
That is true. But you know what? We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
First, that compromise deal to avoid a government shutdown that was signed by President Trump last week contained carve-outs that shield 5 ecologically sensitive sites in Texas from devastation caused by President Trump's controversial wall on the border with Mexico, including the beloved National Butterfly Center Wildlife Refuge in the Rio Grande Valley.
That's good news.
It is, but wait, there's more.
Oh.
In a recent broadcast, the executive director of the National Butterfly Center, Mariana Trevino Wright, noted that the Department of Homeland Security had legally waived 28 federal laws, including the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act, to accelerate the wall's construction. In addition to destroying habitat that is critical to the survival of dozens of butterfly species, she said that any barrier will also have dire consequences for wildlife.
We're getting a 36-foot-tall steel and concrete wall where wildlife is now relegated and trapped. All of the terrestrial wildlife is sentenced to death when the Rio Grande River floods next.
Yes, but now that they've come up with a compromise deal, the Butterfly Center will be protected.
That's the idea. However, Trump's declaration on Friday of a national emergency puts those sites back in limbo because it's now unclear if the Trump administration will honor those carve-outs in the compromise deal with Congress.
Why would they?
In a statement to the Green News Report, Director Trevino Wright also noted that the funding deal expires in 6 months and then, quote, we're back on the chopping block. So we have not been spared. We were given a temporary stay of execution. Finally, it's the Green News Report's 10th anniversary.
What?
We launched our little twice-a-week feature of independent environmental news and snark in February of 2009 when we both had raging colds.
Yours was worse than mine.
Yes, it was.
As you can tell in this clip from the very top of our very first Green News Report.
It's Tuesday, February 17th, 2009. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
So you did not sound good in that report.
No, I did not.
But we plowed through, and it was the first of 10 years of sheer delight, Desi Doyen.
Well, over these last 10 years, the science of climate change has only gotten stronger. More Americans than ever are concerned by climate change's growing impacts, despite the fact that the climate change denial industry is still lying to them about it. The Green New Deal framework proposed by Democrats to address climate change with the speed and scope that scientists say is necessary was considered impossible 10 years ago. The next few years in U.S. politics, particularly the outcome of the 2020 election, will help determine the path for the planet for the next couple thousand years. So we're going to keep going. Thank you for listening and for sharing your thoughts with us over these last 10 years. And thank you for spreading the word about the challenges that we face. This country and this planet ain't going to save themselves, but we can all do it together.
And I don't know if the Green New Deal is any more possible now 10 years later, but hey, it has finally been introduced, so we're getting somewhere. By the way, by the end of that first episode, Desi Doyen, you sounded a little bit better when it came to your cold, but I think it clearly set the tone for the snarky comments that would come over the next 10 years.
The company that's at the center of the nationwide salmonella outbreak has declared bankruptcy. The Peanut Corporation of America filed for Chapter 7 liquidation after two plants were raided and the investigators found filthy conditions. The owner of Peanut Corp showed up to testify at a congressional hearing last week, and he didn't...
Don't smile. There's nothing funny about salmonella.
Well, I'm sorry.
Dirty nuts. Let me just mention that.
So there you go. That's the Green News Report. In a nutshell, if you will.
Indeed.
We are not supported by corporations or political parties of any type. We rely on you. So please consider stopping by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi and I continue for gulp another 10 years on your public airwaves. For much more on those stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, stop by our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Happy anniversary. This has been your Green News Report.
Baby, something's wrong with you that makes you act the way you do.
I bet that'll screw up the YouTube file this evening. Just the same. I love that song. Here we are at the beginning of the third hour of the program. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs, so very much. There's a $25 matching challenge on the table. If somebody kicks in $25, Ralphs will follow with $25 of her own. So that will help considerably, as will the $50 challenge that rolled in from our buddy Robert in Australia. Well, I managed to save some money by fixing my iPod by myself, so got a few spare dollars. Come on, people, chip in if you can. Signed, Robert from Oz. P.S. The exchange rate sucks. No doubt about it. So thank you, Robert, and thank you, Ralphs. If we can find $75 out there, then Robert and Ralphs will turn it into $150, and we will actually get down below Mirabile Dictu, below $800 to finish the month of February, and I'll be on our way to fundraising free radio. That's awesome. Thank you again to Ralphs and to our buddy Robert. That's huge. Thanks a ton. Let's see, what all have we? Just one thing. Just a reminder, arms, as in guns, as in things that kill people, that we have sold to Saudi Arabia, have found their way to, how about that, whatever passes for Al-Qaeda in Yemen. So, sure, why not? What a fantastic idea. The Trump regime had. They wanted, the Trump regime did, to sell nuclear technology, put nuclear reactors in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, because we trust them. We just can't trust those scheming Persians. Right? Yeah. Those scheming Persians can't be trusted with a nuclear reactor for civilian use. But, sure, we can trust our partners in peace, the royal, serene, noble, high graciousness of the House of Ibn Saud. Sure we can. And they went on with the plan, even though the Trump regime was told no. They kept trying. That's a lot terrifying. A whole lot terrifying. Yeah. Oh, by the way, one of the other things, and there were so many shockers in it. The one thing that maybe might have escaped your notice with regard to the Andrew McCabe revelations, among his other jobs, he had to brief former United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. On the doings of the FBI. He went on, McCabe was making the rounds of the talk shows, and he went on The View, where Sonny Hostin asked him about Beauregard. She asked him, was he an appropriate person to lead the Department of Justice? and mentioned his fetish for death sentences and those, you know, sort of right-wing, that sort of right-wing authoritarian trash. And so, consequently, he answered, and this was, I ran the audio earlier, and hell, let's just do it, shall we? Because you go, wow. And we thought, well, I mean, we still think Julius Geezer is a goddamn idiot. But check this out.
We're back with former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. I thought your book was fantastic, and what was really interesting to me was the very unflattering picture of former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. And in your book, you describe him as someone who rarely read his intelligence briefings, confused classified intel with information he read in the paper. And made a lot of racist comments, and especially expressed frustration that many U.S. attorneys in cases where the death penalty was an option were not recommending or pursuing the death penalty.
Yeah, hang on. Made many racist comments. You mean like, I used to think the Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked the marijuanas. Yeah, I guess.
Especially in criminal cases. You even write that he asked where every suspect was from and told you the FBI was better off when you only hired Irishmen. What was your...
Aren't you Irish? I mean...
And he also
are we all?
You also wrote that he said things like they were drunks, but they could be trusted.
That's right.
Yeah, lovely.
So, yes, I am Irish.
Was he an appropriate person to lead the Department of Justice?
You know, Sonny, I'll say this. I had the benefit of working closely with several attorneys general. Mm-hmm. And the things that I saw, the conversations that I had with Attorney General Sessions were unlike anything I had seen from any other attorney general. Mm-hmm. The obsessive focus on immigration when, in many cases, it simply wasn't relevant to the threats that we were discussing. The offhanded comments, the racist comments and things of that nature. It was a challenge to try to make sure that the Attorney General was getting the benefit of the intelligence we were presenting him.
I'm so old, I can remember the confirmation hearings of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, back when Addison McConnell had to make that little lady Elizabeth Warren shut the hell up because she wanted to read a letter into the record pointing out that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was a racist and white supremacist. Something tells me that whole Senate confirmation power thingy isn't working as designed. Or maybe it is working as designed for 1787 or something like that. And that conversation about, I like the FBI better back when we only hired Irishmen. They was all drunks, but at least you could trust them. Well, Jesus God. Yeah. Meanwhile, a note from Darlene in Connecticut. Oh, by the way, thank you to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you big time, Mike. Bigly. Oh, dear God. That means Ralph's challenge has been met, and we now have $50 to meet from our buddy Robert in Australia, where the exchange rate sucketh. Thanks very kindly, Mike. And so we've got, about 45 minutes to meet the other $50 of the challenge. Thank you very much to Robert and Ralphs for getting it started. Thanks a ton. What's that? Monique says, quick question. Can they build a new jail just to put all the Trumpsters and GOP members in it in lieu of the wall? I'd start a GoFundMe. I'm an old school traditionalist, Monique. I'd rather use the Supermax facility in Florence, Colorado. What are they going to do when Trump is gone? Crawl back in their holes and stay there, hopefully? Just like Massa Jefferson? Maybe him and Lindsay will be the new odd couple. Of course, reality show style. That's worth a little jingle. Yeah. Darlene says, Star Trek reference. One point that leapt out at me in Woodward's book Fear is how every foreign policy decision is essentially the Kobayashi Maru. They're all no-win situations. There's no right answer, and everyone in a president's cabinet thinks he has the best answer, for which he strenuously advocates. You can also bet that when those cabinet members step down and write books about their experiences in government, that they're going to raise those foreign policy discussions and how the president screwed up and made the wrong decisions. The stress in that alone is enormous for a president. That is why it is so easy for Trump to say he believes Putin over the U.S. intel community per McCabe. Coupled with Trump's overriding desire to make a financial killing with building something in Russia, he does not have the mental stamina, intelligence, capacity, or youth energy to wrestle with all the competing interests and potential world-shattering outcomes of making considered foreign policy decisions. The stress and mental emotional work of that kind of thinking would require Trump. It's too much for him to bear, particularly if there isn't a pot of gold at the end of it. So yes, youth and health are key to withstanding the enormous stressors and rigors of being president of the U.S. and being Speaker of the House doesn't even compare, although Nancy would do a massively better job than Trump any damn day. That's a damn fine observation. Especially if you're... Well, like, you know, the Obama model was to use the Lincoln model, the so-called team of rivals, and it was without a doubt a challenging debate every day of the week. And he recognized that in the final the last word was always had by him. We don't have that right now. We don't even have that right now. Hey, let's run over to the stress line and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, this is not Todd. This is some shifty Romulan Persian.
Oh, okay. Hey, shifty Romulan, welcome to the program. You know, if you're a Romulan, all we're supposed to see is asshole and elbows. You know, you're supposed to be running away.
Oh, my bad. I gotta work on that. I didn't know you wanted to play that stuff about Jeffrey Beauregard. But you know, did everyone forget that he was labeled too racist by his colleagues to even be a federal court judge?
Yes. No. I remember us talking about that specifically when it was going on, and it was in fact the letter that Coretta Scott King sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Back when Reagan nominated him to be, was it Reagan? A federal judge that had a big hand in making sure that he did not become a federal judge.
Right. The whole point was to keep him, like, down in the lower court level. Like, all right, he can't, you know, don't let this man proceed because he's just absolutely too. If you federal, and remember, we're talking about a profession like doctors, lawyers, judges. They don't generally tell on each other. That's a big deal. That's a big to be rebuked by your peers.
Oh, yeah, and the fact that he had sat in the Senate meant that, well, it was such a lovely little country club. And so here's a guy who was an avowed, undeniable racist based on what Andrew McCabe says. But what did my senior senator from West Virginia do, Joe Manchin? Why, he voted for him. Sure he did.
Man, that's just insane. But and so I didn't know you want to play that. But the reason I called really is that in light of what's happened in the past 72 hours on the federal scale with the president and McCabe and you know what bothers me is the pushback because the circumstantial evidence First of all, the wave of the professionals in the mental health industry. All right, the wave is coming back now. People are waking up again, which is a good thing. But beyond that, everyone lies once in a while. All right, so McCabe got caught for lying. But the thing is,
hold on. Before you buy completely into that, Todd, understand that may have been a hatchet job.
I understand that. That's why I'm glossing over it. Exactly.
He may not have lied.
He may not. That's like saying the Senate investigation about this Russian collusion. They said, well, there's no direct evidence because they didn't question anybody. They didn't do a real investigation. You know, it was cursory. So, right. I agree with you. Exactly. But let's say we give them that. Fine. All right. That's what you say. That's what they say. Okay. So what? You know, that's what they say. But the evidence, the circumstantial evidence, all these books, everything, anybody who's been paying attention, it just bolsters what he's saying. And this shit is fucking scary. You see, and this is my question. I have two questions, really, and because I know other people want to talk with you. I have two questions. Number one, three questions. Number one, should normal citizens start writing leaders or whatever agency handles their mail to our allies saying, this will pass, this man does not represent us? Okay, that's question number one. Are we supposed to believe that the president of the United States of America is acting in the best interest of the United States of America, when in fact almost every action that his administration and his personnel have been engaged in, if you step back and forget about your political party and everything else, really is eroding the whole efficacy of what we call the government of the United States of America. It makes us weaker externally.
I can take that one right off the top, because the fact of the matter is Donald Trump never acts in the best interest of the United States. He acts in the best interest of Donald Trump. We're 2 years and a month into a massive grift scheme.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look what we found out today. That, in fact, he asked Matthew Hot Tub Crime Machine Whitaker to appoint a crony to oversee the investigations into him in the Southern District of New York. And even Matt Hot Tub Crime Machine Whitaker had to say, I'm already recused on that.
I found that shocking. He was like,
and he
Whitaker
was,
said, you know what?
The toddler was infuriated.
This is the beginning. This is going to be very ugly. This is really looking terrible for certain people.
You know what I found on Amazon Prime last night?
I have no idea.
No, of course not. That brilliant German film called Downfall. Do you remember? If you remember back when it was a thing that people kept putting up little YouTube clips of Hitler finds out Michael Jackson is dead, Hitler, you know, and they were, some of them were hilarious.
Well, the
back in the Halcon days, yes, they all used a clip from that film that showed him falling apart. Mein Führer, Steiner, yeah, and it had subtitles and said things like Michael Jackson died last week. Michael Jackson will not be playing Berlin.
Oh, God. I never thought about this shit. Sorry.
Well, I saw that and fired it up and watched it just because.
Right.
And he, the actor who plays Adolf Hitler, plays him brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch, and he was in, he was already falling apart because, among other things, his doctor had been propping him up with cocaine and methamphetamine.
Yup. It's the fastest thing to do.
That sounds like a slogan. Crystal meth.
It is.
It's the fascist thing to do. Well, here we've got a president who is a speed freak in his own right, and he too is falling. Because all through the movie, Hitler just throws these towering, raging fits.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're finding out that Donald Trump is doing the same thing. Towering, raging, screaming fit when Matthew Hot Tub Crime Machine Whitaker said, "I'm sorry, I can't install your crony."
The president of the United States is exhibiting symptoms of chronic meth. Well, I want to say methamphetamine, but I'll say stimulant abuse, which paranoia, sense of grandeur, which, you know, just is on top of his other mental illnesses that we've been talking about for over 2 years. So I'm not trying to cut you off, but it's just so obvious to so many people now who are paying attention. And that's why you bring this up, him falling apart. You see, it's part of this. And that's why he likes Kim Jong-un. Think, if you have a whole country like that, even in Mexico, do you understand? I used to think this was nonsense, and I'm going off on a tangent, but I'm going to come back because that's the third question is coming up. Imagine when you have your own rogue country, you see, you can make all types of chemicals. And I used to think this was nonsense when I was young, and people would say, "Oh, the communists are going to dump drugs in the United States." You know what? That you could do that. North Korea can do that. They can make meth on.
Or the CIA can run cocaine into the United States. I mean, let's. You know.
That's child play. I'm talking about he went over there. He probably got some of that good crystal with Kim Jong-il, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I like you." That's why he like, you know. I'm kind of messing around, but you know, I wouldn't doubt it because it's been rumored that Kim Jong-un. He likes his liquor. You know, liquor and speed goes together like bread and butter.
I can't say I've ever tried that.
Well, when you talk to folks, that's what they say. I mean, that's why, you know, you drink, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Anyway, I only did that stuff one time, and like I told you before, that shit. The feeling was just, and when I did it, this was back in the P2P days, okay?
Yeah.
This came straight from the biker people, because I was with the white boys in the suburbs. And I mean, that taught me I will never do that shit again. And this was like late 70s, early 80s, the good shit. I was high for 12 hours. And I mean, you got
the quality crank.
Oh man, that's right. And I mean, an inch long and not that wide, and burn like hell. But man, and it makes you feel like, oh my God, you're invincible. And that's how it's not. I mean, that's why they deny. I mean, come on, hit that shit. Well, that's what that all is. You keep doing that shit. That's my point. So that just feeds into his other parts of his mental illness. So yeah, yes to all of that. And he's falling apart. You can't do that shit forever. Obviously, you see what happened. But you see, back then, if you notice, look at the people who do the meth now. Their shit is all fucking, the teeth are falling out. They look like they're 80 when they're 20. See, back in the day, they didn't really look like that. The bikers didn't look like that because it was, you know, it was a higher grade because of the P2P. But anyway, I'm not getting into all the chemistry. I think we need to take the president's passport. And this is why I say this. If we look, now that we know all that we know about he and his family, he has had no allegiance to this country for quite a long time because banks wouldn't give him any money. And he had a grudge. And
we know his allegiance goes to whoever has the bucks.
whoever has the bucks. Exactly. He doesn't care about the United States. So we need to take his passport because he can feel the shit's about to hit the fans. People are going to be poisoned pretty soon. People are going to be starting dropping dead. Man, that's why you think Manafort is scared to go to jail and he's scared to be out of jail. You know, Russia has all the money in the world. What they did didn't cost shit.
Yeah.
So anyway.
No, I get it. I get it. And, you know, the corruption marches on. I don't know if you saw it or not, but you remember our buddy Wilbur Ross?
Oh, 5 cents a can, Wilbur.
The Commerce Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he lied. I think we can say lied. He lied on his ethics agreement and his financial disclosure form.
No.
Yeah, his form said that he had sold off bank stocks that he didn't really sell.
When was this?
Oh, I mean, it's current.
Oh, that's not good at all.
This is according to a report on CNN as of today.
Isn't he on the verge of death like every 3 seconds anyway?
He reminds me of Roger from American Dad. You know, he's just kind of gray and got a head like a light bulb.
Wait a minute, Roger was the alien, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Every time I see Wilbur Ross talk, I'm like, man, please don't die while you're talking. I'd like, don't you want to take a nap?
Well, Wilbur's the guy who back during the shutdown said he just didn't understand why people didn't go out and borrow a couple of million dollars so they could get over the hump, because that's what his banker'd do for him.
All right. Now you're going to bring me back to averages. Remember I started talking about modal ranges and averages? That's the reason I brought that up back then. Back when we talked about that. It's because people were going to talk about how much federal workers make. And of course, you have people who make a lot of money at the top. But that's why we can't go by averages, because it skews. So anyway, yes. I'm sorry. I had to say that. It's just,
no,
what's the average pickup truck? What's the average pickup truck in the United States, Bob?
You mean the average cost of a pickup truck?
The average who?
The average cost?
No, let's say you're walking down the street and you see somebody in the diner and you say, what's the average pickup truck? What are they going to say?
Well, a Ford.
That's right. F-150. Because that's what most people have.
Yeah, probably the big three, the F-150, the 1500 Ram, and the Silverado 1500.
Right. Now, see, that would be the modal range. Right,
and your GMC,
and then then GMC, right. Anyway, I'm sorry, I went off on that tangent. It's just I find it. You know, I saw a poll this morning in South Carolina. They were talking about something or another, and the plus or minus was 3.8. That's a lot. That's like, dude, you shouldn't even print that. That's too fucking much. That means the sample size must have been 10 people.
Well, I mean, isn't a standard margin of error somewhere around 4?
Well, it can be, but you know,
I've seen margins of error around 4 for sample sizes of 1,200.
And that's really not that good. That's my point. It's really not that. That's just getting by. That's just getting by. That is really. If you want something really accurate, you want something between 2.5 and 3. You know, and you know, I mean, just seriously, you do. But, you know, that's hard to get. It's hard. It's hard. That's the whole thing. It's like survey research is difficult. And then the people who do respond, you know, they're highly motivated one way or the other. And that's what makes it difficult. But anyway, so, you know, those are just the questions I had. But today, I say to the things that happened today, this is, I just don't understand. And I, you know, I've been reading The Hill lately, and I see what you mean when you say they lean right. They just let these right wingers print anything. That Oliver guy, I think his name's Oliver. He prints some crazy shit. Then Susan Adderall. I know that's not her name, but Abrahams or Altman's. Or, what is her name? She used to work for CBS and she broke out. But anyway, they have a lot of Trump sycophants that they allow to put articles in as news. And if you really read it through. But at the same time, you know, it seems like everyone's granted a voice. But they did have an article about a sixth grader being arrested in school in Florida. I don't know if you caught that one.
No, what?
A sixth grader in school.
Oh, yeah. The kid who wouldn't pledge?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, and now he's facing a bunch of juvie charges?
Took him to fucking jail.
Yeah, took him to juvie lockdown. That's disgusting. And when he said he wouldn't pledge, they got after him. And then he talked back and he said, you know, no, because the pledge is racist and y'all are racist and I don't want anything to do with your racism. And so that, I guess, qualified as a violation of Florida's anti-uppity law.
Right.
And I guess you can take a kid to juvie, well, a black kid to juvie lockdown for getting uppity.
Now, I believe that was in DeLand, Florida, which is basically, if you go west from Daytona Beach, that's going toward Orlando. I've been to DeLand, is like outside of Daytona, that's 30 some miles outside of, between 30 and 60 outside of Daytona. And it's in the, you know, it's in the deep south. But you see, this school to prison thing is real. Now, there was nothing physical. That's what disturbed me. We should not be doing this school to prison thing. It's such a bad example. And I'm sorry, man. I didn't want to take up. I know other people want to talk with you, but it's just, today was a hell of a day. It was a hell of a day.
It was. It's all coming so damn fast, Todd. That you just you feel like you're about, you know, chest deep in the water, and the tide's rising. And every time you take a step back, you're still chest deep in the water.
Didn't you make a comment the other day about how people are in a general kind of, maybe you didn't say it this way, but people are in a general malaise. People who are paying attention, it's just we're weary.
Yeah, well, you wore out. And I think that's by design. You sit there and you just pump out filth and pump out filth and pump out filth, and it begins to bear on a body after a while.
Well,
yeah, I noticed it when I noticed it when I saw photos of photos from back 2015 and 2016 before the election, and I was just. I looked like a happier person, and a lot of other people that I have pictures of looked like happier people. And now we're like, God damn it.
That's when you mentioned it. That's right. That's exactly how you presented it. Yes. And I agree with you. It's really sad. Oh, and right. And you know what's funny? You think about, like, we all understand now this guy's in here to really destroy our government for whatever reason, lots of reasons. But look how quickly that one can destroy our way of life, and look how long it's going to take, possibly, to rebuild. It only takes a short while to destroy. Destroying is easy.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. No. It's like the old maxim that war is exciting, but peace is dull.
Well put. Well, I hope you stay warm. It's terrible here. I can only imagine what it's like there.
Oh, I think we don't know whether we're going to get the snow, the ice, or the rain and flooding. but there's not much in the way of hope for, and I've been predicting it for a while that because this winter has been so sloppy and wet, that as we move toward the spring rains, we've got the potential to have it be real bad again here in Appalachia, because we don't have that much soil to soak stuff up in the first place. And when you couple that with what's already gone and the clear cutting and the mountaintop removal, you're begging for an ecological disaster. As you go further east into my county, you get into the areas that they call in the higher elevation mountain areas. I mean, I'm 1,600 feet above sea level, but it gets up, around the 2,000, 2,500 foot range. And, they're going to get snowed on. And over into the Allegheny front and Virginia and everything, they're going to get snowed on in a big way. But whenever I hear that there's a possibility of ice, I go, oh, shit.
That's not good for the power lines at all.
Oh, well, yeah, especially when it's Appalachian power.
It's not good on a good day.
And lo and behold, there's a photo from Arnold. Arnold sends me a picture of a pickup truck pulling a trailer. Everybody has one, and there it is, the Ford F-150. Me, I'm not, now, to be fair, I'm not an F-150 fan, Todd. Because they, in order to reduce weight and maintain some sort of reasonable fuel consumption, they went to an aluminum bed. Ford did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've heard horror stories about that aluminum bed. Once you've got trouble with it, it ain't ever going to be right again.
I'm glad you told me that, because I've seen the commercials. Okay, I've seen the commercials about that new. I think they came out about 2 years ago. And they would have one up against the GMC. Now, I've never owned a pickup, but I know like people love their F-150s, the old ones. And I'll be honest with you, man, I like that GMC Silverado. I just like that.
Yeah, the Chevy and the GMC, they're basically the same thing. The last one I had, the rusty red pickup truck that the pillhead totaled back in December 31st of 2011, when he rear-ended Agnes, that was a three-quarter ton Dodge, and I mean that thing was a tank.
Really?
God, I don't think a day goes by that I don't miss it.
Damn.
Had a big old 360 V8 engine.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Shit, you could tow anything with that. Damn. Yeah.
It wasn't a dually or anything, but my God. And it did. And, out on the highway, the damn thing would get 22, 23 miles a gallon.
What?
Yeah.
With that big-ass engine?
Yep, because it wasn't having to labor that hard.
Once you get up to cruising speed, you're all right, huh?
But, that big old Chevy V8 that they put in things like the Tahoe,
yeah.
Of course, it's computer-controlled. And it'll shut down. It'll shut down to like four cylinders once you're at cruising speed on the highway, and it'll pull down 26 miles a gallon. Which for a truck engine ain't exactly bad.
But the other day I saw—I don't know how common they are—but I saw a little Yukon. Not little, not little, but it's like a big box kind of, only two doors.
Well, isn't the Tahoe and the Yukon the same thing?
I don't know.
Four door SUV with third row seating.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So this was a hybrid.
What?
I didn't. Yeah, that's what I said. I said, "Oh my God, I want that." I mean, this thing was brand new. I was like, "Shit, that looks great." A hybrid? Oh.
Well, that's when we will know that we're really transitioning away from primarily internal combustion engines. Because it's a different thing with a truck. I mean, if you want a battery powered four wheel drive, you're going to have one big ass battery. If you want to have any kind of a range on it at all.
Well, that's a whole that's a whole nother program talking about that's the whole thing. If we can get so much more power in a small amount of space, and speaking of space, it's too bad, Odyssey died, but. Like, can you imagine? We could engineer things. That thing lasted for 15 years?
Yeah, well, we're just talking about an internal combustion engine. I had 130,000 miles on the rusty red pickup truck.
On the Dodge?
Yeah.
And it was red?
Yeah, and it was a 98. And it was the 8.5-foot bed. With an extended cab.
Man, no wonder you missed that. You can do anything with that.
Yes, you can.
That's the big bed. Oh,
yeah, that's the long bed. And the beautiful thing is that extra half a foot means that you could fit a stack of sheets of drywall into it, and close the gate.
And close the gate, so it won't slide out like they do around here.
Yeah.
Oh God, you know, man. Look, I believed you as soon as you said it the way you said it, like doesn't the day go by?
Agnes was sitting stock still, waiting to turn left onto our road, when one of the local pillheads driving a Toyota RAV4 plowed into her. There weren't even any skid marks.
Oh shit!
And
you thought you should live through that.
And, she and Ferg both had their seatbelts on, but, she got a head injury out of it, and he got injured out of it. And that RAV4 folded up like an accordion, like it was designed to do, but it bent the frame on the truck, and there's no coming back from that.
No salvage.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you. Because, see, that's a shame, and it never give you what it's worth.
No, it was the front end of a long term financial beating. Let's see, Ron in Raleigh says, "Here's what you need." The VW Amarok pickup, Olympic Polar Expedition. God damn, that thing's kind of neat, but I bet what do I want to bet that's not sold in the United States?
It's nice looking. VW's got some nice looking vehicles. I mean, they're shit.
Yeah, and if you live in the country, you need a truck.
That's what I'm talking about. You see, I just understand it now. I can see why you need a nice sedan and a pickup. I mean, at a certain age, when you have a house, the shit you have to do, water heaters break. There's something breaking around here every day. This is a full time job living in an old house. You know that.
You know what? That ain't even funny, but it gets a cowbell because it's the damn truth.
Oh my God!
Old house. Old. There's always something to do in an old house.
It's not a joke. I mean, shit, people say, "Well, you got a roof over your head." I'm like, "Yeah."
Until the next big wind comes along.
Man, it's just craziness. Look, plumbers, plumbers coming tomorrow. I'm learning what I can do. But the pickup thing, my brother Phil is not doing well in Raleigh and Durham. So, just so people know.
Oh, sorry to hear it.
So just so Ron knows, Ron knows it's not. Not a good time. So, Ron, if you're listening, if you know Phil, you say you know Phil.
But here's what kills when you asked me a minute ago what's the average, and I said you mean by cost, because you cannot get a brand new pickup truck, assuming that you could. You can't get a brand new pickup truck with bench seats and cloth and no bells and whistles for less than $30,000.
I was going to say a decent one, you're going to like 50 or 60, for the silver. Yeah, you're right, though. Right. it's going to be stripped for something. It's going to be stripped down for less than that. It's going to be. It's not going to be worth it.
Yeah, you might get a so-called work truck, which is the old-fashioned truck that's just a single cab, single bench seat, vinyl seat, small ordinary wheels, and it's hard to get one with a manual transmission anymore, but you can get that for $30,000. But go to one of the truck websites and do that build your own thing, and mm-hmm. you'll be looking at an $80,000 truck before you know what happened.
Oh my God.
And that's simply ridiculous.
Well, you know what? That's why you can't get your hands on one of the old timey Toyos, like the old timey, like let's say 1987 Toyota. Regular pickup, man. You look around the world. That's what the ISIS uses, because you know what? They go wherever.
Because you can't. Yeah. They're just up the road from me. There is a Nissan Frontier from 2003 with I don't know what the mileage is, and they're asking $5,300 for it.
And it's got a billion miles on it.
And it's probably got a billion miles on it. Exactly.
If you can get, people do not part with them. That's the thing. And like you were saying, it was not going anywhere. And you know, I had an old friend. He explained it to me, and that's the reason I know about the Toyota, because he bought one new, and his wife made him get rid of it when he got a baby. And before that, one of our friends, he had a little old Corolla, like a 1979, and we took that thing, man. We tried to kill that car. That car wouldn't die. And so that convinced him to buy the Toyota truck. And we did the same thing with his truck. That truck, you think it's spindly, it's not. But you see, when you buy that, when you get a pickup truck, it's built heavier. I mean, that's obviously us. But
well, one of the things I was, because I just nerd out and read the reviews and stats and reports, and the longest lasting vehicles on the road today are vehicles that are built on a real frame, not a unibody.
Interesting. So the body on chassis, back to the old timey body on chassis.
Things like the Toyota 4Runner.
That's the baby dog right there, man.
the Chevy Tahoe, the the pickup and the pickup trucks have a longer last longer than any other automobile.
Well, they're made by. I mean, if you look at the hinges on it, that's what you got to look at. The hinges, not the shocks, but the frame around the shock. Well, anyway, right. They have to be built heavier. That's what he was explaining to me, because he was like, "You should buy a truck, Todd." I'm like, "I don't want a fucking truck, man."
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, right. But I'm coming from the city, and he lives out in the country.
There were times when I took the big rusty red pickup truck with its 8.5-foot bed. I mean, the damn thing was the size of a small sailboat. 30-footer. And I could do it. Not many others could, but I could parallel park that son of a bitch.
That's because you're a driver, Bob.
Under the right circumstances, but whew, parking garages were an adventure.
Oh, God, no. Not now. Have you been to a parking garage lately?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you don't go into one of those with a full-size pickup with an 8.5-foot bed. You don't do that. And, it had been through a lot. A deer had committed suicide into the side of it and then came apart all the way down the... Ugh, oh, it was nasty. And it's one of those things where even though you got full coverage now, you don't call the insurance company because your rates are going to go up. Mm. Chrysler, Dodge, Mopar has never been any good with paint. And they're clear coat peeled like the... Like the plastic that comes off the front of a front of a new phone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, anyway, good conversation, man.
I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you take care, Todd. Later, man.
You too.
Bye now.
All right.
That's our buddy Todd. Let's run over and, hey, 9 minutes left in the program. That does not qualify as a time check. 9 minutes left in the program. We've got $50 to match Robert's $50 challenge. You know, five folks at $10 a piece, 10 people at $5 a piece, however, but it will actually get us down below the $800 mark for fundraising for the rest of the, you know, to finish out fundraising for the month. And it will almost knock out yesterday. And so we'll only have today, tomorrow, and it, you know what I mean. You know how this goes. So hopefully, hopefully there are folks out there that want to see that challenge met. And thanks again to Mike in Cascadia for meeting Ralph's challenge. Now all we got to do is find somebody's to meet Robert's challenge from Australia, where he took a beating on the exchange rate. Thank you again, Robert. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I know
it some days better than you know it. Then again, other days you know it better than I know it. But the key is we both know. All right, well, in the waning moments of the program tonight, Bernie's announcement earlier moved me in the direction of doing something that at this point in presidential politics, I have never done before. And I will share with you what that is. I went into the back of the closet and pulled out and dusted off my crystal crock pot to give one of my patented fearless forecasts for 2020. Now, bear in mind, in times past, my fearless forecasts have occurred maybe as much as 6 weeks before an election date. So this is like going way out on the proverbial limb. But if you're sitting down, if the Horn family congregation members will collect themselves in a circle and pay heed to what I'm about to say, it might behoove them. It might benefit them. So if you're ready, I will go ahead.
You may fire when ready, Gridley.
Okay. 2020, it's a sure thing. And what I mean by that, based upon the stated exploratory intentions or official announcements thus far, 2020 is shaping up to be a presidential contest in which there'll be something for everyone, candidate-wise. Only today, I read in a bona fide newspaper website that self-help new agey speaker and author Marianne Williamson plans to throw her aura into the ring in the great 2020 race. She is hoping to fix America with love, tough love. And I read that and I got to thinking about a possible stump speech, because you know all of them have to have their standard stump speech, okay? So I can imagine Marianne Williamson standing up there with her aura intact and her robes flowing in the gentle breeze, beatific smile on her little face, promising voters a healing crystal-studded lump of tofu in every pot.
Well, there's another guy, I think.
And a rechargeable scooter in every garage. That's what we've come to, Bob.
Hot diggity. I can hardly wait. There's another guy who ran in 2016, is running again in 2020, I suppose, who is running on the Mars platform.
Oh, God.
His name's Andrew something, I think.
Yeah.
And
no,
that's
his legal name, Andrew something.
It is his position that there is a human civilization on Mars, and they time travel back and forth to Earth. and periodically wipe out people's memories so they can't remember that they time traveled back to Mars.
Ooh. Now, does he believe that explains our mass behavior in 2016?
I have no idea, because I can't go much further than that before I start hooting like a barn owl.
Oh, well, on the scale of crazy, perfectly sane being 10, I mean, perfectly sane being 1, and madder than Lyndon LaRouche being 10, where does this fellow from the Mars
Andrew party? Basiago.
Oh, there you go. There's a name. That's a $20 name if ever I heard one.
He is he claims to be a government-sponsored time traveler who has visited Mars as part of a secret conspiracy that involved Barack Obama.
Wait a minute. I think I heard him one night calling in to the late Art Bell.
I would.
That was right up Art's alley.
According to Basiago, as a child in the 1960s, he was involved in a time travel experiment for the U.S. government. He claims that a decade later, while in college, he was part of a secret program to put humans on Mars.
Yeah, actually, I said it sort of in jest, but I actually did hear this guy talking with Art Bell several years ago in his final incarnation of Cosmic Talk Radio. I couldn't call his name, but when you mentioned what you just mentioned, it said, bingo, that was the guy. Honest to God.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name again? I want to look him up.
Andrew Basiago, Basiago. And I guess he's also a lawyer?
Yeah. Yeah, I need to drop him a line so he can take me back in time to show me where I left my keys. Jesus.
That's straight out of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, isn't it?
I've got the MP3 of that interview, and I know that you have copious free time to fritter away. I will have to send you that file so you can listen to this guy's story. It really is interesting on some level.
Oh, I've heard a lot of that story, actually. I know someone who but takes it all as gospel.
For real.
Really and for true.
Hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe you ought to have him on one day for a half hour just to...
Let me throw this out there, because we're almost out of time, but I want to...
Yeah.
This is a geezer check. On a pair of Levi's, there are two slash pockets in the front and two patch pockets in the back, right?
Yeah, plus a little tiny pocket on the right hand
side. Okay, so the little tiny pocket on the right hand side, what is that?
What was its main, its original
purpose?
Yeah,
what's its original purpose?
I believe it's to put a pocket watch.
You are correct.
Yeah.
So I was wandering around the internet today, and courtesy of Reader's Digest, you know, those meaningless little links that you... This is the real reason jeans have those tiny pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. I guess there are entire generations of human beings who don't know what a watch pocket is.
Yeah. Or a pocket watch, even.
True enough.
Yeah.
And that sort of dovetailed nicely with the great big John Wayne controversy that erupted on social media today.
Now, I missed that.
Some guy found the old 1971 Playboy interview with John Wayne, in which John Wayne demonstrates that in 1971, John Wayne was a really disgusting, bigoted racist.
I didn't know there was any real question about his bona fides. I wouldn't necessarily call him a racist, but then again, I didn't read the interview.
Oh, no, you kind of, once you read the interview, you're going, that's a racist.
A right-wing reactionary, sure, got it. Bought and paid for, I got the receipt. But, I guess some of that goes, racism does.
No, he says, and it's a quote, I'm going to believe in white supremacy until it's proven otherwise.
Holy fuck.
And all of us, and all over the interweb tubes, there were people going, "God damn, I didn't know John Wayne was racist." And I was sitting there thinking, wait till they find out that he went to a party at the Reagan's house to celebrate the murder of Kennedy.
Oh, God. Do you have a link to the interview? I would love to read it. I used to subscribe to Playboy.
Are you a friend of Carol Baker on Facebook?
I think I used to be. I think I said something that she didn't like, or I didn't. She said something I didn't like, and I went away. But yeah, I send her a message. Maybe she'll send it.
Well, no, I mean, it's just on her page. Just look up John Wayne Playboy interview. It'll pop because, you know, there's this phenomenon, and Wayne is the one who first put me onto it. There's this phenomenon among a certain demographic in this country that history didn't happen until they came along.
Oh, yeah.
And this was kind of a manifestation of that. And so, you know, when I saw the watch pocket thing, it was like, ah.
Here we go. And again. I love Levi's. That's really, I mean, I've got a pair or two of dress casual. Slacks that I probably don't fit into them anymore because I wear them that infrequently, but my uniform is Jack Purcell Converse sneakers, Levi's T-shirt and a denim shirt, and a hoodie if it's chilly.
And I guess it's just one of those things where you become aware of the passage of time. There were things that my parents knew how to do that were commonplace to them that I guess were totally lost on me. My mother, for instance, knew how to kill a chicken and gut it pluck it and have it for dinner. And she also was well-versed in what one did at hog-killing time. This, of course, was all lost on me. But then Darlene in Connecticut says, young people of today have never seen or even know what a rotary phone is and would have absolutely no idea how to operate one if you put it in front of them. And in fact, there's video evidence to that effect.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's an experiment done and a guy, hands a rotary phone that's hooked up to his, like, teenage son and his teenage son's buddy and says, okay, you've got 5 minutes to call this number.
Yeah.
They fail.
Well, boy, that could take us off into all directions, and we're already a little over time. But I do have one serious thought to close my portion of the program with. And because earlier when we were talking about the various older Democratic candidates who have or will throw their hat into the ring, we were talking about the matter of age and viability in terms of health and, you know, versus the stress of the job. I think in some part, one of the purposes of our primary system is to, it's like putting the horses into the ring and putting them through paces of a sort.
Yeah, it's to test their stamina.
Yeah. And I wasn't kidding when I sent you that email earlier about standing in line for over 4 hours in 2016, waiting to get in to the venue to hear Bernie speak here in San Diego in 2016. And he, honest to God, for his age, the man has you won't catch him napping.
No, he's vigorous, the problem is being vigorous at 80 doesn't mean that you can't break a hip at 80 in 3 days.
Oh, I know. Franklin Roosevelt wore braces.
He had polio for Christ's sakes, and he died young.
Well, yeah, but back in those days. What was he, about 64, FDR, when he died? And it was a cerebral hemorrhage, as I recall. And I'm sure that the stress of the job and also the simple fact that, you know, World War fucking II was going on, and the fact that he smoked probably 2.5 or 3 packs of you know, unfiltered Camels or Chesterfields a day added or took away from his lifespan. I mean, there's a lot of factors that enter into it. All I'm saying is, yeah, I don't think if Bernie were to become the nominee and were to be elected, I don't think that you would find him engaging in what 60% of his presidential day being caught up in quote executive.
No, I don't think that in the least. I'm more worried about us being in the middle of a crisis and having the shit hit the fan.
Well, and the other thing too that you mentioned earlier, and I wish I had gotten in earlier because these are good points that are relevant tonight and maybe not in the future. You talked about the damage just in a little over 2 years that Trump and his minions have done to this country, and how much it will take effort and money-wise to undo that. When the day he took office, we were already in a progress deficit. In other words, not just a progress deficit, but a getting ordinary, commonplace shit that needs to be done.
Right, because we had been left to the tender mercies of a Republican Congress since, what, 2010?
Well, no, going back further than that.
I'm talking about in the immediate past.
Well, no, it's cumulative, Bob.
Well, sure it is.
The damage that Reagan did for 8 years, and then H.W. Bush for 4 years, and in his own way, the damage that Clinton did for 8 years, and God knows the damage that the W did for 8 years, and the damage that occurred under Obama's watch simply because he had an obstructionist, racist,
anti-American
Republican Senate leader in the form of Mitch. And now you layer onto that lovely cake the damage done in 2 short years by Trump and his minions. We have got our work cut out for us. So whoever is elected in 2020 better be up to the job. And that's part of what the primaries are there for, to find out who's the man or woman with the plan, who is the man or woman who has the drive and the energy and the stamina and the ability, for Christ's sake, to get shit done at long last. And I don't envy any of them. I truly don't. I fear for this country on some level, simply because so much has been left undone or has been deliberately mishandled that even to be on an even keel is a monumental task at hand.
If you get familiar with the history of the decline of the Byzantine Empire,
mm-hmm.
you'll find something similar happening. You really will. An era when they just couldn't get a good ruler. Now, it wasn't the same as the system we have here, but you can see the same thing in the Roman Empire. You can see it, and you can certainly see it as you come down through history. You know, a couple of bad monarchs will fuck you for centuries.
Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, in the early '60s, riding the city bus to the school in elementary school every day. You know how they have advertisements running along the ceiling of the buses?
Sure.
There was a PSA for, I guess, Radio Free Europe or something, and it was an angry-looking Nikita Khrushchev, and the caption, "We will bury you." And that was scarier than shit. And you fast-forward it to the age of Trump, Putin's lapdog, and you wonder if perhaps what today's version of Russia, if maybe that's not what they're doing, but in a different way. They're burying us, and we've got a 30-some-odd percent of people who bought into the plan, who said, sure, go for it. Knock them dead.
And the fact of the matter is, I don't know if there's anybody in that Democratic field as it is or who might announce yet who has the starch to really take on a campaign, you know, against Trump.
Because and it's not just
because
ability.
It's going to be dirty and bloody and bare-knuckled.
It's not just ability that matters in this upcoming contest. Each and every one of them have certain interests or powers behind them, urging them along, that have their own little scenarios of what a good presidency conducted by that candidate will present. And given the tenure of the times, the small government, the ineffective government mindset, that's rampant in the land. I don't know for a fact that even the best of the Democratic candidates will be free enough from the constraints.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, here we know what he's going to do with Elizabeth Warren. He's going to call her. He's going to smear her as Pocahontas for the entire campaign.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, she doesn't seem prepared to deal with that. She's been sort of flat-footed in her process so far. I think it will probably be beyond Trump's abilities not to at some point just call Kamala Harris that word,
mm-hmm.
or at the very least a see you next Tuesday.
Yeah.
He would chew up Amy Klobuchar and spit her out. And while there would be outrage all across the land, the maggots would say, "Yeah, you tell them commie socialist Democrat women, by God." And they would reward him for it. And there are Republicans, these never Trump Republicans. I don't trust them as far as I can throw them, Scott. Because
rightfully so. Bob,
because they'll be right back in the booth punching his fucking name, come November 2020.
Yeah.
And so
they have no integrity, is what they don't have.
Well, no, they're pig-eyed mean. I mean, beyond the lack of integrity, they're just mean people. And I know you've seen that old bumper sticker that says "Mean people suck."
Yeah.
Well, they're mean. And I don't know if because. And I don't mean to pick on the women in the race. I mean, I don't think the men look like they're much better prepared to, because about the only thing you could do, and this is to get down and, you know, what Twain said, you know, never wallow with a pig in shit. You'll both get covered in shit and the pig likes it. But it seems like that's the only way forward is to get in there and play professional wrestling with him, because that's what the process has become.
Well, and the opposite thing is what's needed.
The only thing you're left with is John Goodman's character from The Big Lebowski, and every time Trump opens his mouth, he says, "Shut the fuck up, Donnie."
But see, and haven't we been pre-immunized or conditioned, is maybe a better word, in the approaching 2020 presidential race for the lowest form of politicking?
Yes, it's going to be ugly, nasty, filthy, and soul-sucking. And so lo and behold, here we are. I was watching social media all day because it was like Twitter and Facebook couldn't get another story in edgewise besides Bernie declaring.
Yeah.
On a day when we found out some pretty horrifying shit. And it's either love or hate. You know, the hashtag never Bernie, you know, the hashtag Bernie or bust. And it's like, well. And I think that was along about the time that I dubbed 2020 the long, ugly slog through the land of "we learned nothing from 2016.
Well, we better had somebody. I remember it was either Esquire or another popular magazine in the late 70s had a cover story of the child's toy Mr. Potato Head. And the headline had to do with creating the perfect presidential candidate using a Mr. Potato Head schematic or method. And right straight out of the box, I don't know at this point that we've got a presidential candidate ahead of us.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, just consider the reality. And I mean, we've run over again, but
that's my fault.
No, it's mine too. But because we get these good conversations going, we know that being statesmanlike and serious about the business of presidenting, well, we saw how that worked out in 2016 because Hillary refused to get down and wallow in the mud with him. And that sure didn't stop him, however, from dragging her into the mud and wallowing on her, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
So
we already know that that doesn't work.
Right. So, you know, put a check mark by that. Don't do that again. So you've got to have somebody with a razor wit who can at the same time just enunciate policy, but be prepared to flay the skin off his bones at a word. And so I'm going to be watching. I'm going to be watching for who appears to have that skill set, and who is willing to talk about not just being president, but being a president who has a House and a fucking Senate to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's going to be key.
Because there was not a lot of money out of a lot of money that was raised that flowed downhill to House and Senate campaigns the last time through with one of the Democratic candidates. That's just a fact.
I wonder, speaking of money, I wonder if I'm not mistaken, candidates can hang on to their campaign war chest funds. Do we have any sense? Because I heard today that in like just a few hours, Bernie raised something like $4 million just this morning. Does anybody have a sense on what was in his campaign chest already from 2016? Because you know he didn't spend it all in Vermont.
No idea.
Because that's the other insidious thing about politics, the way it's practiced in this country. If you don't have the ducats, you don't get to play.
Well, at least you've got something to be excited about this time through, Scott. You and everybody else in California, because you've got a chance to shake things up and negate some of the effects of South Carolina and Alabama and all those Confederate states that never vote for Democrats and shouldn't have the power to select who the front runner is.
Yeah, because we're like in like April or March or April. Is that when the California primary will be?
March.
Okay, good for us. Jesus, June is such a stupid time to have a primary. I mean, well, it's going to be exciting, and I urge the Horn family, to those who can do it, to kick in some bucks, because this is a good resource for us to have, you know, to keep abreast of what the hell's going on without it being run through a bunch of stupid, you know, mainstream media filters. Now, I happen to like the mainstream media because it gives me a general sense of things, but I certainly don't rely on it, you know, for my A to Z of what's going on. You know, I read a lot.
Right.
I look at stuff. I listen to this program. But the point of my pitch is, you know, this is a resource that we may not fully recognize how valuable it is until it ain't there. And with a fucking $900 or $800 nut to bust, you know, I personally wish I could do more than I'm able to do, but I know that I can kick in 10 every month, but I've done it already. So, you know, take up the slack, any of you who can, because that's how important this is. It's like, I'm old enough to remember when President Johnson ran in 64, all of his commercials had the voiceover guy say in a very serious tone, you know, vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home. Well, what we've got ahead of us, folks, is too goddamned important to not be as involved in as many ways as we can.
Right, and we're not. And let's understand, we're not just running against Trump. We're not just running against the Trump organization, Trump and the GOP. We're running against Trump, the Trump organization, the GOP, and fucking Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say, yeah, that constitutes the stakes are too high for you to do nothing or not much, you know? And anyway, thanks for going over, Bob. It's always good stuff. And hats off to you and Agnes and the kids. And you keep us sane in a lot of ways. You make us crazy, but you keep us sane, too. How is that possible? That's a dichotomy, isn't that? Or paradox?
It's magic.
All right.
Scott, take care.
I'll see you, Bob.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Yeah, I ran over right smart bit, but I think it was worth it. And by the way, thanks to Anatole for knocking out $10 worth of Robert and Australia's exchange rate sucks challenge. That means we got 40 to go on the for the overnight crew and whatever else we can do to knock out the remainder of the fundraising for February. So maybe that'll happen. Thanks to all of you who do keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. Thanks to everybody who shares their precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room. Thanks to Brother Deacon Asa and to Sparky and to Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years today, leading the human rights struggle against mountaintop removal from inside the sacrifice zone in Appalachia. Thanks. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.